streets are screaming now. Greetings, all you 99 percenters. This is your host, Dr. Jack Rasmus. This is Alternative Visions. Okay, we've been focusing a lot on Trump here in recent weeks, but we're going to turn our gaze to the other side of the big pond called the Atlantic Ocean. We're going to look at Europe here. Especially, we want to focus on France. You know, they say as France goes, so goes Europe. Well, we'll see whether that proves true once again in 2017, because very important elections coming up in France in April and runoffs in May that one has to pay very close attention to. What we have over there is, in France, a big fight going on between the various parties, and what looks like could be a similar shift to what went on in Britain with the Brexit vote, what went on in the U.S. Here with Trump, or maybe France is different. Certainly, domestically, the political alignments and the history and the consciousness, the role of the French working class is kind of different, very different, than here in the U.S. So we'll see whether that's going to play out, or whether France is part of this bigger trend of a rightward shift going on as the global crisis continues. Don't believe anything about, oh, there's a recovery going on. Stock markets reflect the rich and what they're doing, and they're doing fine. You know, in the U.S., stock market has tripled here since 2009. And corporate profits have tripled since 2009, and corporations have redistributed more than $5 trillion to their shareholders in buybacks and dividends in the last 5 years. And, of course, all these big tax cuts since Bush and through Obama allows all that wealth to get redistributed to their very wealthy stockholders. Vast majority of all stocks and bonds are held by the 1%, the wealthiest 1% households. So it's not strange that with that $5 trillion and tripling of stocks and bond markets and financial assets and tax cuts, that the wealthiest 1% in the U.S. have accrued 95% of all the national income gains since 2009. Yes, that's the number one legacy of Mr. Obama. We can thank Obama and Hillary and also the Democratic National Committee, which is run by big corporate members here. You know, the corporations that took control of the Democratic Party lock, stock, and barrel back with Bill Clinton, and they gave us Trump. They gave us Trump with the policies of growth for the rich and not for the rest of us, and they gave us Trump with the Obama legacy, and Trump with Hillary's stupid campaign. They deserved to lose. It was such a dumb campaign. They ignored the working class in the industrial states, and they paid for it. But that's what happens when you have big corporate lawyers and politicians running the show in a party like the Democratic Party, which is totally bankrupt, has collapsed at its core. People don't see it. You just see these people in Congress still called Democrats, but underneath it, it's a hollow core. There's nothing left of the Democratic Party locally except maybe on the two coasts, you know, New England and the West Coast, and the rest is collapsed everywhere. It's bankrupt. It's dead. And we should really be thinking about what's the alternative here. Well, I don't want to get off on the U.S. I've been talking about that here the last couple of weeks. And hopefully we will have a show here in the not-too-distant future on some of the discussions that are going on very intensely within working-class elements and left elements here in the United States of, you know, what's the alternative politically in terms of political organization? Political organization is the question of the day in the U.S., but let's turn back to France here. To understand what's going on in France, let me give a little bit of an introduction, and we're going to bring on a very important guest here who is involved in events in France. spends part of his time in the U.S., part of its time over there in Europe. So he's got an eyewitness view. The guest is Alan Benjamin, a very longtime activist in the labor movement here in the United States from California, who, as I said, spends a lot of time over in France. So he'll give us an eyewitness view. Alan, you with us?
I am indeed. Thank you, Jeff.
Okay, great, great. Well, let me give a little background here, and then I'm going to ask you some questions and then turn you loose here. Okay? Well, listeners should understand what's going on globally since 2010 in Europe. What we've got is a global trade slowdown going on. Global trade was growing in 2010 at 20% annual rate. Today, it's not even growing at 2%. We've had a collapse of global trade, exports, imports. Well, that's because the global economy is slowing down and has been, little by little. In fact, last year was the first year that global trade grew slower than global GDP. And, of course, global GDP is slowing, and actually slowing more in the North Atlantic advanced economies because a lot of that, even the slower GDP, is still boosted by China's growth, which is still in officially in the 6% range, but actually 4.5%. But that's another question. Still, 4.5% is not bad, and it's propping up global GDP, which is really much less than it's even indicated. But trade is growing even slower. Now, areas and regions of the global economy, you know, like Europe and Japan and so forth, are in emerging markets, are extremely dependent upon exports and trade, much more than the United States. So, you see, it's even worse out there than the U.S. The U.S. recovery is like 60% of normal historically since 2010. And as I said, that growth is accrued to the 1%, mostly, totally almost. And elsewhere, it's even worse. Europe, even worse. They've had a major double-dip recession in 2012-13 and near stagnant growth ever since. And what a little growth you can identify for the Eurozone and European Union is really Germany. Germany is really sucking up all the growth in Europe because of the relationship that was established with the European Monetary Union in 1999, sometimes called the Eurozone and the Euro. The Euro, as I've written in my book, Looting Greece, an Emerging New Financial Imperialism, Greece is sort of like the case example of how Germany is sucking up all the growth from the periphery in Europe because of its privileged position within Europe. So if you took out Germany, the rest of Europe would be stagnant or still in recession, especially the periphery countries. So Europe is even worse off, stagnant growth, maybe negative growth if you take out Germany, near deflation, prices are drifting down to zero. Well, you know, recently you said prices are recovering. Well, that's because global oil prices have been rising, not because economic activity in Europe is really improving. You've got over $1 trillion in bank non-performing loans. In other words, the banks have never even been cleaned up. You know, in the U.S., the capitalists cleaned up the banks here, at least the big ones. But they didn't even do that in Europe because they had that second recession here. And there's other reasons why, you know, Europe doesn't really have a true banking union or fiscal union, and that's another reason why their recovery has been so much more poor. And then your periphery debt, government debt in the periphery is still tremendous. Greece, Italy, Spain, so forth. And then you have what's happening to the working class in Europe. 40% of the entire European labor force is temp work, and that's probably an underestimate. You know, maybe half of everybody employed in Europe are part-time temp workers. In other words, no benefits, low wage, no security. You work a job here for 4 or 5 months, and then you work another one here 4 or 5 months. That's the reality of the new form of capitalist exploitation of labor. you don't pay them as much. You lay them off whenever you want, and you don't pay them any benefits. Listen to this figure. In France last year, 80% of all the new hires were temps. In Spain, where they say, oh, there's a big recovery going on, and we've reduced the unemployment from 25 to 17 or something like that, 90% of all the jobs created last year in Spain were temp jobs. Same thing happening in the United States. There was a study not too long ago that said since 2010, 92% of all the jobs created were alternative employment, contingent, part-time, temp, independent contractor, right? Don't get the idea independent contractor means you got your own business. No, independent contractors are, examples are truck drivers who have their own rigs and work, 18 hours a day just to try to make ends meet. That's what we mean by independent contractors or middle management type marketing managers and so forth. They get laid off and they sell their services back to their company on a part-time basis so the company doesn't have to pay benefits. Now, this is what independent contractors really are. They're really working class folks that have been screwed. And then, of course, we have all this gig economy bullshit going on, right? The new trend in which what do corporations do like Uber, right? Well, they make even more money because they make the workers provide their own working capital, their cars, right? This is the new exploitation. Exploitation is a reality of capitalism, but it's no longer just extending the workday or intensifying productivity, which all exist, of course. That's going full guns. But we have all these new forms of exploitation. Well, exploitation is really entrenched in Europe. And then we have the problem of free trade. The European Union is a customs union, in other words, a free trade zone. And what you've got going on is capital moving into the new areas, Eastern Europe, where the labor is cheaper and other costs are lower. And then you have the labor flows going back in the other direction. You know, a million Poles left Poland to work in the UK. Right? Massive migrations going on. And overlaid on top of that internal massive migration in Europe, of course, are these foreign immigration migrations from the Middle East to North Africa, which is largely the result of Europe kowtowing to U.S. foreign policy, taking on and disrupting the governments and the societies, invading Libya, stirring up the shit in Syria and so forth, and then all these people start coming into Europe, right? Well, that's what European capitalists get for following U.S. foreign policy, and they're going to get another problem if they keep following foreign policy driven by U.S. neocons penetrating East Europe and stirring up the shit in the Baltics. Okay, so all this resulted in Brexit. Not all of this, but a lot of this, the Brexit explosion, in which basically the working classes in Britain said, no more. We're not getting any benefit from this free trade European Union stuff. We're just getting the problems. So they voted to leave the European Union. That's their protest vote, It's kind of like Trump, The working class didn't really support Trump, but they wanted to stick their thumb in the eye of the ruling elites in the U.S., and they voted for him. Now they're going to pay some price, but, that if you don't have a real movement in political parties, all you can do is express your discontent and vote by voting against. All right, so Brexit was the explosion. Then we see another indication of this discontent late last year, with the referendum vote in Italy, where the Italian elite wanted to centralize power so that they could have a better control over the economy and the political system in Italy, and they got voted down there as well, a real trend. Right? So the question is, if Brexit and the Italian referendum vote is going to be continued here in the French elections. We have a real interesting mix here of political parties, which I'm going to get our guest to really talk about because he knows more about it than I do here, going on. There's a drift, rightward drift, just as, you know, Brexit was championed by the UKIP party and then the Tories, the Conservatives, in order to avoid being outflanked. Cameron, the then Prime Minister, promised the Brexit vote, you know, and he got stuck with it as a result. Well, we have the French elections coming up and another debt crisis brewing in Greece, by the way, this summer. We have votes in the Netherlands. We have probably another vote on Italian government. And we even have a vote in Germany here next fall, where we're witnessing a similar rise of a right-wing party called the Alternative for Germany. And that's beginning to shake up politics and elections in Germany, too. But the real indicator is France. And what we have in France is a mix. And I'll just indicate that mix and then turn it over to our guest here. We have a mix of parties. First of all, we have the old Socialist Party, François Hollande, which is done, cooked, toast. They'll never recover, I don't believe. Hollande, popular support, I think it's less than 5%. Well, that's what he gets for social democracy joining, being the junior partner to neoliberal European neoliberalism and attacking the working class, right? So he's lost, the Socialist Party has lost all support, kind of like the Democratic Party here in the U.S., right? Become a junior partner to neoliberalism, and, you know, that's the end of your labor support eventually. So we have a collapse of social democracy going on in Europe. Hollande is a good example of that, and we have a rise of alternatives here. And the alternatives in France are Marine Le Pen, the right-wing National Front, the kind of Trump-like party, maybe even further right than Trump. We have an independent who senses there's an alternative here. I think his name is Macron. And then we have the old-line capitalist party here with this guy Fillon. And Fillon is looks like he's fading away because of scandals. So, you know, SP, the Socialist Party's out of the picture. Fillon probably will be. Will it be a battle between Le Pen and this independent Macron? Ah, we will see. The polls show Le Pen has 26% popular support. Macron has 21%. Fillon has 17% and collapsing. But then there's 35% of none of the above in France. Who are these 35%? Okay, I'm going to turn it over to my guest here and ask him a question. Alan, will the National Front pull off another Brexit-Trump surprise? Why or why not?
I don't believe so. I think, to give a little bit of background, I would nuance your presentation just a bit ago. In Britain, it was a working class vote for Brexit. And the absence of the Labour Party, the head of the Labour Party, Jeremy Corbyn, had taken a very strong anti-European Union position over decades. I worked closely with him to develop and to organize actions and campaigns against the European Union, but he buckled to the pressure and he did not provide his own constituents, because it was the people who voted Jeremy Corbyn who voted to leave, who voted for Brexit. It wasn't the right wing. There were sections of the working class that bought into the right wing arguments, but largely it was that protest because it had nowhere to go. There was a small wing called Lexit, Left Exit, within a number of the unions, the railroad, automotive, locomotive, and other unions in Britain that did speak out not only for a Brexit, but for nationalizing and renationalizing everything that had been privatized. So they gave a content to the Brexit vote, which was open the borders, renationalize, return to the policies of public enterprises and public services fully funded. So that existed, and it's important to understand that it wasn't this right-wing surge that is spoken about any more than it is in the United States, in my opinion. The question in France, you can't understand France if you don't understand the reasons for which Hollande is so unpopular. It's not only that he implemented the most reactionary program of any government in France over the last 100 years. He went further. He wasn't a junior partner. He took it upon himself under direct orders from the European Commission, Brussels, to implement austerity, to make the cuts that none of the others had dared to do. He went after the Social Security, which is a single-payer health care. He went after pensions. And he went after the key medium of defense of the workers against this part-time and others, which was the El Khomri law. He went to implement El Khomri, that was his minister of labor, to break down the trade union rights, the right to organize, the right to have a full-time job with benefits. And that provoked the biggest mobilizations in recent French history. 14 one-day actions, in many cases national strikes that paralyzed the country, with 3 to 4 million people at a time in the streets. It was a huge movement that said, we don't want the part-time economy, the economy. And those workers were largely betrayed by their own unions. They were demanding that these one-day actions aren't going anywhere, that we have to have continuous strikes until the government withdraws the bill. The pressure was so great that the Parliament, the Senate, and the Congress never voted to impose the El Khomri law. The Prime Minister Valls, who was supposed to be the number one candidate leading for the Socialist Party, Valls imposed the law using Article 49-3 of the French Constitution, which allows the president, it's a presidential system, allows the president to decree a law without the consent of the Congress.
Sounds like a French version of anti-labor executive order, huh?
It's an anti, but he can use it for anything, not just for, it's a Bonapartist regime. De Gaulle demanded that be included in the founding of the Fifth Republic in 1958 as a way that he could decide what was good or what was bad. It's a little bit what Trump would like to see. He'd like not to have the checks or balances or anything. He just wants to say, I can do it. That was De Gaulle. But he got that written into the Constitution, which is what the French workers hate. It just so happens that it was used in this way to dismantle the unions, to dismantle the forms of social protection. And that's the reason for the unpopularity. It was just impossible. And mind you, these weren't just workers organized. It was organized and unorganized workers, youth, understanding that they had no future but these temp jobs unless they stood up to defend the current or the existing labor legislation. It was very huge. Now, what's happening today? Hollande, as you say, is discredited. He could not even run for re-election, the most unpopular president in France's history. His prime minister, Valls, got trounced in the internal elections in the Socialist Party. Benoît Hamon, the left wing, the far left wing of the Socialist Party, who's taken a stance, by the way, for Alexit, the left exit, accompanied by leaving the European Union and repealing the El Khomri anti-labor bill and renationalizing providing the full funding and putting the single-payer healthcare system back on its feet. So he won based and won big time against Faust based on that. And so there's a polarization, is what I'm trying to say. It's not this right wing movement that's somehow engulfing Europe. It's a polarization, and the workers are looking for is a means, as you said, for political organization. What's interesting is that the right-wing parties are the Republican Front. Fillon is totally discredited. He was supposed to be the next president. He was the handpicked ruling class. He was the Hillary Clinton, in a sense, handpicked by the ruling class to beat Marine Le Pen. Marine Le Pen, by the way, has not grown in support from her father over the last 20 years. They have a constant 25% of the vote that's hardened. And then in the second round of elections, they often get a divided vote of the more conservative sectors. But before we get to Marine Le Pen, Emmanuel Macron was the finance minister under Hollande. He's now the new face to try to capture the center-left and the sort of center-right against Marine Le Pen. And everything indicates that the second round will be Macron with, I estimate, 60-65% of the vote to Marine Le Pen's 35% of the vote, 35-40. I think that Marine Le Pen is tried to tone down the sort of most extreme racist language of her father. Nonetheless, her campaign is for leaving the European Union, and she equates the European Union with the rise of the Islamic Front in France and challenging France's secular laws and the whole growth of terror and Islamic. So there is very much that right-wing element, but it's somewhat, she's tried to present herself as more acceptable to the French people and not this extreme zealot that her father was. But I still don't think that she is going to make any big inroads. The question that folks that I work with in the unions and in the independent political movements in France is and that the media does not talk about, the traditional mainstream media. Benoît Hamon is polling at 20%, 22%. He will be wiped out of the first round in the first round of the presidential election on April 23rd if he runs alone as is. There's a second left-wing candidate, Jean-Luc Mélenchon, who's been a candidate before for the Left Front, and the Left Front is the Communist Party, the Socialist Party, a wing of the Socialist Party, that is, and the Left Party. And Mélenchon ran in 2012 and got, in the first round, something like 24-25% of the vote. He was eliminated. But to demand that Mélenchon and Hamon get together, organize in front, organize a common platform, and that one of the two desist, stands down in favor of the other, so that there can be a unified left slate, a unified left candidate with a common program. And the common program is one that they both are campaigning for. Therefore, both are for leaving the European Union, but not on the terms of the right wing. They're campaigning and coupling that with the call to repeal the El Khomri law and to reestablish the French Sécu, the healthcare system, Sécurité Sociale, and to renationalize the post office and other services that have been largely privatized. So there's the possibility that this movement in the streets could pressure Hamon and Mélenchon to run a united slate. They could, if you just went by the polls, they're combined at 28%. They could make it into the second round, and they could disrupt the whole scenario for the poll makers. Is it likely that they're going to come together and meet? I cannot say. There's pressure from within both of these left candidates for a United Left candidacy. And I think that in the current situation, if they did come together with a program, they could be the new surprise. If this election in France has been one of surprises. Fillon was supposed to be the candidate that wins, and the new scandal, Penelope Gate, with his wife having received roughly $500,000 to do work that didn't exist. But Macron is also under investigation for using €120,000 of his of the finance ministry's budget to launch his own independent campaign. And Marine Le Pen is under investigation as well for using $300,000 out of illegally that she did not report in funding. So the French political system's in crisis. I don't think it's impossible for a United Left candidate who stands up and provides an alternative to Marine Le Pen on the issue of a left exit. And I think they would eat into some of her base that votes for her because they just can't go along with all the cuts. And they see that Marine Le Pen rails at the European Commission, and she does it correctly. Like, of course, she doesn't mean it any more than Trump means to leave free trade, as you pointed out in your excellent article. Trump is for bilateral free trade and for putting the screws on his allies to cough up more money. Marine Le Pen is no different. She's voted for many laws in support of the European in support of the European Union when push comes to shove. So it's a very uncertain scenario, but the backdrop of it is a radicalization of the working class, of large sectors that want, it's that 35% that you're talking about, that want to see a solution to their problems, to their needs, a positive working class solution. So the pressure is on for Hamon and Mélenchon to come together, in my opinion.
If Le Pen and the National Front is for a Frexit, an exit from the Eurozone, and if this United Left possibility, I guess it's not a reality yet, Mélenchon and others, 28%, roughly the same support right now of if the polls are accurate, which tend not to be in this period of general transition and flux. You know, you can't trust the polls in the U.S. You couldn't trust it in Brexit in the U.K. I wonder how much you can really trust it all in France. Nonetheless, it sounds like, correct me if I'm wrong, that either National Front or this left United Front might go into the second round. There's always two rounds of elections, if I'm correct, in France here. Do you really think
the first round is April 23rd?
Macron will be in the second round, or if this United Left can get together, maybe it would be Le Pen and the United Left? Is that a possibility?
Well, the issue is this. Macron right now is the high vote-getter, according to all polls. He's filling in for the loss, the rapid decline of Fillon. Fillon was the Margaret Thatcher candidate. Macron is the whiz kid, young. He's the budding genius of finance. And he is his only claim to be a candidate is that he's independent. He's created a new party called En Marche, On the Move. And he's independent. He could be that outsider. He's presenting himself as the outsider when he's not. He was Minister of Finances and imposed the Loi Macron, which deregulated financial markets in France. So he's no outsider any more than Trump was. But the possibility, if they unite Benoît Hamon and Jean-Luc Mélenchon, if they were to unite and get 28%, they could wipe out Le Pen in the second round. I don't think it's not likely that Macron will not be in the second round. I think Macron will be in the second round because all the center and anti-Le Pen center-right ruling class vote is going to be focused on Macron now that Fillon is out of the picture.
Oh, he'll pick up that support from Fillon as he fades, huh?
He'll pick up that center-right-wing Republican, the Republican, Républicain, Front Républicain, the Republican Front, the right-wing center-right. So the only possibility, and it's an outside possibility, but I know that the folks that I'm working with and that there's a huge sentiment in the unions, in all the French trade unions, up from bottom to top, for these two characters not to run against each other, but to form a common programmatic front that calls for the repeal of this law, that calls for an exit, but on a working class platform. And that is not impossible. And it could, if that were to develop, it could transform the whole political situation, not only in France, but in Europe, that there is a possibility for a left pole to give voice to the disenfranchised and to the anti-globalization movement that, for now, has nowhere to go but these right wingers.
So it's a possibility then that Macron looks like he's going to get in the second round. A possibility if the left unites, they might bump out Le Pen, and it would be a Macron versus the United Left slate. And as you say, that would be a major shift. That would almost be like if Bernie Sanders had won the Democratic nomination, which, of course, he'd never had a chance. But it would be something similar to that, it seems to me.
That's actually quite an astute observation. It would be somewhat like that. But here, the difference is that these are working-class parties, and these are candidates that, independently of the leaderships of these organizations, the base of the parties, the Left Party, Socialist Party, Communist Party, has always been among the unions and the working class movements. So I'm not, at this point, I wouldn't put my money on it, but there's a huge movement that's developing to demand and have meetings. There are delegations that have gone from unions to meet with them to say, what the hell, you're both saying pretty much the same thing. Don't you realize that divided, we're not going to have a voice in the second round. Mm-hmm. We're not going to have a chance at the apple here. Come together, work out the differences. One of you can be president. One of you can be vice presidential candidate. They don't have vice presidents. They have prime ministers. But that's not impossible. That's not impossible. And it's still, April 23rd is still 2.5 months away.
Well, that would also be a contrast to what you said at the beginning here with the Labour Party in Britain not really taking a strong enough position organizationally, not really being able to extricate itself from supporting British neoliberalism and therefore losing out. And that's the problem with the, quote, liberal left everywhere, whether it was those minority elements of the Democratic Party or the Labour Party in Britain. If they cannot extricate themselves from being a justification for neoliberal policies, then they're dead ducks. And I think, comment on this, what's your view of what's happening in Germany with the SPD, given the impression that it's going to contend, break from the conservatives and Angela Merkel and run independently as the AfD, Alternative for Deutschland, the right-wing Le Pen National Front equivalent, begins to grow, like I said, like 50% of the support over there in Germany. Is the SPD going to make a break, or will you think the SPD is just going through the motions here? Sorry to break
that's
you
the,
off from
the
from
question
France
that
situation,
asking.
But it seems an interesting parallel.
It's a question that everyone's asking. The SPD has promised break for a long time, and it has not delivered. It has continued to act as the willing partner, sort of the His Majesty's or Her Majesty's loyal opposition to the policies of Merkel and finance capital. There's been a big rift within the unions that support the SPD, with a demand that they break, that they follow and implement policies in the interests of the workers. And there've been mostly among the Public Employees Union. But again, that's the class struggle is refracted in these different formations. But in France, there was already a split that just took place. The election of Hamon shows that at least the base of that party wanted something radically different. This is the far left of the Socialist Party. No illusions on my part in Hamon. He's been complicit in along the way in supporting this or that neoliberal agenda. But today he's speaking out on two fundamental issues that concern the majority, the working class majority in France. In Germany, you don't have that rift yet. You have possibilities, you have promises, you have statements, and you know we've heard them time and time again. Unfortunately, I'm less optimistic about Germany than I am about France.
Mm-hmm. Lots of parallels here. Can you elaborate a little bit more? It's very interesting, this left exit from the Eurozone here that you mentioned, as opposed to the right Frexit of Le Pen and the National Front. What's the similarity and differences there? And the bigger consequences, whether it's left and right for the whole European neoliberal regime here, if France leaves, whether it leaves on a left exit or a right exit, is going to be really significant. It probably will unravel the Eurozone either way. But say something about, if you can, explain to me, how is the left exit, the Lexit, different?
Well, the left exit or Lexit arose in Britain when a large number of Labour Party leaders and activists and their allies in the TUC, Trade Unions Congress, said, wait a second, Jeremy, you've long been a champion of the struggle against the European Union, and now you're buckling to the globalization pressures and to the neoliberal agenda. And they said, and so they tried lobbying Jeremy. I called Jeremy. A lot of people said, what's going on? And he said, no, this is, things have changed, and we have to be responsible here. And so a Lexit committee was formed of unions and others who said, we're against the European Union, but we don't want to be painted with that same brush of these nationalist and anti-immigrant. Because that was the whole issue, that it's the anti-immigrant voice. They equated exit, any form of exit, with this anti-immigrant scenario. And they said, no, we are, in fact, it's the European Union that created a limit on the number of immigrants from Poland and from Eastern Europe that could come into England. So, you know, we're you champions of the stay of the movement to remain. You don't have any claim to be the great champions of the refugees, since you've gone along with all the injunctions and laws of the European Union that have limited them, at least in the case of England. So they formed and they put together a platform called Lexit. And Lexit was, we want to leave. We want, we're not opposed to trade, but trade based on fair trade, equal terms, agreements. There's always going to be trade. We're not against trade, but we're against the forms of the globalization both in terms of any bilateral agreements where the dictates of finance capital are there. And so they elaborated what they would mean by free trade. And then they said, we're for opening the borders. And they said that you cannot divorce a platform of Alexit from the content, what should be done. And so they said the first task is to renationalize transportation, largely because it was a lot of the transportation workers' unions that have been screwed the most, and to renationalize British Rail, to renationalize transportation, air and others, the postal services, and all these industries that have been, and create money for jobs, and take money out of the war budget, take a break with NATO, very important, and that's an issue that Marine Le Pen might be for exiting, but she's for remaining within NATO. And NATO is the vehicle through which, as you pointed out, the countries, the European countries are being enrolled to attack Syria and to take more and more of their budget for foreign, to follow U.S. policy and wars. And so they, in the Lexit vote, was to leave NATO and make money available for human needs, not war. Just on the issue of the immigrants, what's important is Hamon and Mélenchon have taken a clear stand for opening the border to all refugees from the Middle East and to all immigrants from countries that are being oppressed and that are forced to flee from Northern Africa or from Eastern Europe. And their members have been fined and put in jail for aiding the refugees. If you harbor or provide food, and this was a big case and near the border with Italy up in the Alps right now when they're freezing temperatures and people are crossing the borders. And in the town of Hoxie, they were detained. So this is, it's the left is taking this up as their campaign and saying this is our alternative to Marine Le Pen. We are on the side of these people. We're against the war. So their content is against the war policies, for leaving NATO, for using funds, public funds, to meet human needs. So it's that movement of Lexit in Britain is spilling over into this movement in France, which is saying united candidate around a program similar to the Lexit program in England. And a number of the Lexit activists have come to France and spoken at union rallies and said, this is what we need to do. We need to build the Lexit movement in Europe to counter the Marine Le Pens, the reactionary, the alliance in Germany, the movement in Hungary that imposed a referendum that was totally reactionary, et cetera, the Northern Front in Italy. So I guess that's how I would answer your question.
Mm-hmm. Related to that, what would be the position, if you know it, of this potential united left slate in France with regard to Putin? You know, we see the Le Pen, they love Trump and they are pro-Putin, at least in some of their statements. We see Orban in Hungary with the same attitude, the AfD in Germany, Willers in Netherlands, they're pro-Putin. Well, I wouldn't say pro-Putin, but, they're not falling behind the U.S. Neocons that, Russia is the big threat here, and let's put missiles and nuclear weapons in the Baltics and all that other kind of nonsense here. And I think even Le Pen has talked against that, which can be translated into an anti-NATO kind of position, since NATO is carrying that water for the U.S. here, confronting Russia. And these right-wing, growing right-wing movements seem to be, I wouldn't say pro-Putin, but, not anti-Putin. What's the this United Left's position with regard to Russia and this U.S.-led challenge to Russia in East Europe?
Well, First, again, a word of caution. There is no united left yet.
Okay.
There's a movement urging there to be a united left. Otherwise, that voice will not be present in the second round. So, and the differences between Mélenchon and Hamon on key issues of the European Union, key issue of repealing the El Khomri law and repealing other laws, reactionary laws that were instituted under Hollande to fully return the social security system, the single payer, to its 1945 initial promises and mandate. Those things are really what's primary. And if they can come together, again, this would transform. But their provincial interests, their differences, you know, I can't say I know what their position is on Putin. You know, the left front comes out of this. You know, it's a split in the Socialist Party and moved in working with the CP, which used to be a huge force in France and is dwindled to less than 5% of the vote in legislative elections. Hamon is a more recent expression of a fissure in the Socialist Party. They've both, I'm sure, taken stances on Putin, but I don't think that the issue of Putin is or should be an issue for forming a common front around the key question. So I don't have an answer. I know that Hollande was, you know, much more your traditional Democratic Party, you know, anti-Putin. So I don't have an answer to that.
Okay, so primarily focused on domestic issues, pressing issues in France at the moment, I guess, would be a way of expressing that. Where does the other, quote, center-left parties in Europe line up on some of these issues, you know, like Podemos in Spain, Die Linke in Germany? You have any input you'd like to share with us on that?
Podemos has grown immensely as a grassroots movement from below. And their big problem and the reason they haven't grown is because they took a stand. They did not take a stand against the European Union. Their supporters in Catalonia argued that the best way for independence for Catalonia is to join the Europe of Regions. Under the European Union, there's an overarching plan to eventually move beyond nation states to regions. And so some of the nationalist forces, for example, the Bretons from Brittany in France, they're not necessarily with Marine Le Pen because they're saying the European Union will give us a vehicle to create an independent Brittany under the, you know, aegis of the Europe of Regions. So it's very complicated. So Podemos, you know, I haven't followed recently. They had a huge breakthrough against austerity and against a lot of it on national grounds. But where these different groups, Die Linke comes out of the CP in Germany, I don't know where they stand right now on the issue of Putin. I can ask folks. I'm going to Paris in 2 weeks. And it's a meeting, European meeting. There'll be people from Podemos and Die Linke, I'm sure. So I can come back on your show maybe and tell you where things stand with them.
Sure, that would be great to know what if there is a pattern here beyond just France, you know, in terms of creative alternative to this right-wing populist, if you can call it populist, false populism, as I said, Trump was false populism, just as Obama was false left populism. Trump just playing the same game, flipping it around, and fooling everybody again. American capitalists are very, very clever. You know, is there a trend here in Europe towards this left populist alternative, which it sounds like you could almost, well, maybe not realistically, but potentially say that this left United States might represent?
It's a movement that's looking. It's a huge movement that expresses itself in strikes. There's a huge strike wave going on in France today because they're closing hospitals, massive closing of hospitals and post offices. So there are strikes. There are constantly strikes with the rail workers because they're closing down rail lines, privatizing them, and shutting down the ones that are not considered profitable, the lines that service poor communities. So the same is true in Italy. So it's not like you have this movement where the workers have been defeated and somehow there's this incipient fascist movement taking place. There's a polarization. There are proto-fascists, without a doubt, but it's the challenge, and hopefully it'll be met, because if not, we're in for deep shit. The challenge is that movement can find its political expression in a united left slate, or in the development of a real alternative and break by the SPD in Germany. That would be nourished if France, you had a left, even if the left candidate didn't win, that you would have a united slate vying for top office on this platform. It could transform French political life in Europe as well. And it even would have a chance to win. You know, be a tough fight against Macron, who's going to have the whole ruling class united. But the whole ruling class was united behind Hillary Clinton, and that didn't work. So anything is possible. There's such a uncertainty about politics. The polls are uncertain. So it's not out of the question that something could emerge from the left. That's my hope. That's the folks that I'm working with. That's their hope.
Yeah, in my view, what we've got is the beginning of the working class stepping on the political historical stage again, but very uncertainly, sometimes just doing it through voting, sometimes just doing it through the parties of the capitalists, trying to find a new way for political expression and independence. We're at the beginning of that whole process. Meanwhile, in the U.S., we have the contrast of trying to reform the Democratic Party, which is just a waste of time, is in my view. Anyway, maybe we'll have you back and some others. I know in U.S. there's discussions going on. It's only discussions on that later topic. But I want to thank you very much for your very informed presentation here of what's going on in France. Okay, this
Thank
is...
You.